Thanks to all of you for coming out this Sunday afternoon in Spanish for Utah at 5 o'clock. Thanks to those who download these talks as podcasts from iTunes. We invite your comments, correspondence, and feedback by emailing us at utahchristians@gmail.com. We also have a membership class at our website, utahchristians.org. I'd like to thank those who become members. We couldn't do what we do without your help and support. Today we'd like to talk about the role of darkness, which might seem like a strange subject, because many of our lectures talk about getting ourselves out of darkness, getting ourselves out of a defeated mentality, getting ourselves out of depression. But the distinction is, we may be in situations which should depress us, which should make us feel defeated, but the point is, we ourselves don't feel defeated, we don't feel depressed, even when all those about us would feel so. If we're affected at all by Hollywood, each and every one of us pictures ourselves living our entire lives on a sun-drenched mountaintop with our arms raised in the air and the soundtrack, Eye of a Tiger, playing behind us. And we do have moments like that, but they're few and far between. Maybe a graduation, state baseball championship, birth of your first child, get that job that you've always wanted, or you get that promotion. Most of our life is spent in the dark valleys of life. And we have this stereotype anyway of people who live in places like Southern California where there are no seasons. I lived there for 10 years and I can tell you it's not true, but we do have this tendency to think of people who live in a place where there's no moisture, there's no seasons, as being a little bit shallow and not having, say, the depth of a New Englander where you have all four seasons. Be that as it may, without the dark, there's no dawn. Without the sunset, there's no sunrise. Without the winter, there's no summer. So darkness is part of God's plan for our lives. The contours of our life, the geography of our lives, include the valley of weeping. Everybody's going to go through that at some point. The valley of darkness. Nobody's immune. The valley of calamity. The valley of ill health. Some of us will go through the valley of divorce. The valley of debt, the valley of loss. So-called mentally healthy people, it said, this is a little bit verbose here, but follow it and you'll get the point. So-called mentally healthy people enhance their self-esteem by creating flattering illusions about themselves. They hypnotize themselves into thinking they can achieve permanent happiness through impermanent things. People who cannot buy into the illusion of material happiness are called depressives. Now, according to a lot of studies, there's considerable evidence that depression is marked not by unrealistic pessimism, but by depressive realism and the absence of illusion. Let me paraphrase that. It means, if you don't buy into the illusion that material things, the accumulation of material things and material success will make you happy, after all, look at Robin Williams, look at Michael Jackson, you are in more touch with reality than people who psych themselves up. You've heard of books called The Secret or The Law of Attractions. I've often wondered about The Law of Attractions. It's all about positive thinking without working God or spirituality into the equation. I often wonder, if there's a rich man, he's got a really positive attitude about protecting his assets. And if there's a burglar who has a really positive attitude about breaking into the rich man's house and stealing his assets, who wins? The guy with the most positive attitude? The point is that if your vision is only earth, air, fire, water, mind, intelligence, fault, ego, if you're intelligent and if you're objective, you've got to be depressed. So in that sense, depressives have more of a grasp on reality than optimists. However, the depressive attitude is marked and marred by an absence of knowledge about God and the spiritual life, because there is a whole another dimension beyond what we can see with our material senses. And in fact, that dimension is ultimate reality. There are five facts about valleys of life. One is they're inevitable. Two is they're unpredictable. Three is they're impartial. Four is they're temporary. And five is they're purposeful. Valleys are inevitable. Every one of you have either just come out of a valley, you're in a valley right now, or you're headed for a valley in the near future. It is said, in this world, you will have trouble. It's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when. Prabhupada says here, our guru, the argument of the atheist that one cannot be punished for one's misdeeds unless proved before a qualified justice is refuted herein, for we accept the perpetual witness and constant companion of the living being. A living being may forget all that he might have done in this life or in a past life, but one should know that in the same tree of the material body, the individual soul and the supreme soul are sitting like two birds in a tree. What he's saying here is that according to due process of law, no one can be prosecuted and punished without the testimony of eyewitnesses. Someone may argue, why is it that my present suffering is coming upon me? There's no rhyme or reason behind it because there had been no witnesses, no one to testify to my having made bad choices in the past from which I'm reaping results in the present. Prabhupada points out here that there is a witness, there is an overseer, there is a proprietor, and he is called the super soul. He is the expansion of God who lives in the heart of every living being alongside with the individual soul. Prabhupada goes on here, we may forget the misdeed for which we may suffer at this present moment, but we must remember that the Supreme Lord is our constant companion and he knows everything past, present, and future. And because the Paramatma feature of Lord Krishna destines all actions and reactions, he is the supreme controller. Without his sanction, not a blade of grass can move. That means the miseries that come upon you, the negative situations, the depression, they're not random, they're not accidental, they're destined. Every action we make represents a choice. Every time we do something, we're planting a seed. We're planting a seed either for good or planting a seed for bad. And eventually those seeds will produce fruits. Some of the seeds will take longer and some of the seeds will take quicker. Some of the things that we're going through in this life, the seed, it's the reaction, it's the fruit from something we did, in fact, in a previous life. It took that long to produce a result. Dark valleys of life are inevitable. The seed will always produce fruit. It's not a question of if, it's just a question of when. Every single one of us, and we're going to be really cute here, we're going to go through in our lives 3 D's, 3 S's, and 3 F's. The 3 D's are difficulty, disappointment, and discouragement. The 3 S's are suffering, sorrow, and sickness. And the 3 F's are frustration, failure, and fatigue. Don't be surprised and don't be disappointed when they happen. They are a normal part of life. So valleys are inevitable. Secondly, valleys are unpredictable. Got a graphic here in front of me of a young lady whose car has had a flat tire. It's pulled over and stalled on a lonely stretch of road, and she's sitting beside the car in her wedding dress. Would you call that an inconvenient time to have a dark valley happen to you on your way to your wedding? Any other time than that, couldn't she have scheduled it a different time in a different place and a different circumstances? In fact, dark valleys have an uncanny sense of when is the worst time to show up. Have you ever started a day with zippity-doo-dah, zippity-ay, and somewhere it turned on a dime? You went to the doctor's office last week, and you get a phone call from the secretary, we need you to come in for some more tests. The postman comes and delivers that registered letter from someone who's suing you. You get in a freak accident on University Parkway. I remember before we opened this building in 2001, we'd done many festivals in front of the log building, just on the other side of the hill. There's a little grassy area. But we didn't have any solid structures to protect the performers and the audience and the exhibits from inclement weather. It was my job to fill the whole festival area with tents. On festival days, we've been very fortunate in Utah Valley to get lots of volunteers. People come for the duration of the festival. They help us run the festival, serve out the food, sell the t-shirts, and do the gate. But try to get volunteers during the tent setup on a Thursday or Friday. It just doesn't happen. The tent setups for 16 years are done by Churu, Churu's Echo, and Churu's Shadow. That's it. And try setting up tents all by yourself. That's where forearms would really, really come in handy. Many times, Friday evening, 10 o'clock at dark, I would have got all the tents set up. I would have been totally exhausted. I needed my rest, get up tomorrow, and then we have all the bric-a-brac to do for the getting ready of the festival and then the festival itself. Out of 16 years, twice, I was awakened just after going to sleep by howling winds coming up over this hill and the sickening sound of fabric, tents, metal joints just crumbling into unrecognizable, twisted shapes. You imagine going out and seeing all the fruits of all day's work undone without any sleep and some or other having to get it back into some sort of usable shape in the morning and then do the whole day's festival. I had those experiences. Fortunately, those days are behind me. 3 years ago, we were getting ready for Diwali. I forget whether it was the morning of Diwali or the day before. It was a beautiful fall November day. Diwali is such a happy event. It's our Thanksgiving. It's the last festival of all the 10, 15 festivals. It's the last festival, and we get a few months to relax and rest and recoup before the whole round starts again with the Festival of Colors in Los Angeles and Spanish Fork. Bhai Bhabhi is on the hill there. She's got a piece of equipment which puts grass seed down, and it plants the grass seed, and so that in the spring you have grass when everyone comes to the Festival of Colors. I was in my office. Beautiful, warm, 70-degree day, not a cloud in the sky, festival coming up. Someone comes up to me and says, Bhai Bhabhi had an accident. What she'd done was on the slope, slipped and landed on that piece of equipment. She did not know the last thing in the world that she could have intimated when she got up on that beautiful, auspicious fall morning was that she would go to sleep that night having had major surgery and a hip replacement. Things can turn on a dime in a nanosecond. Dark valleys are unpredictable, and thirdly, they're impartial. It is said that rain falls not only in the land where it's needed, but it also falls gratuitously on the ocean. Similarly, disaster hits the just and the unjust. Disaster doesn't care whether you're good, whether you're bad, whether you're ugly. It's impartial. It hits everybody. It's not because you're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, that you get a pass on disasters. We don't always understand, even pious, religious, God-fearing people don't understand always why what's happening is happening. But we have to trust that God has a bigger perspective than we are, that He sees things we don't see. He sees where we're going to be 10 years from now. He sees around the corner where we can't see. We're just thinking from our limited point of view. Why can't I get a job? Why can't I have a baby? Why can't I get married? Why can't I get out of debt? Why can't my health get better? Problems, trials, difficulties, disturbances, downtimes, depression. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It doesn't mean you're a good person. It just means you're a person. Welcome to the material world. Well, why me? Why me? Why not you? Do you think that you should be the only one in the whole universe that never has a tragedy, that never has a loss? Do you think you should be the only one that gets a pass on growing up? We're all cute when we're kids. People come and they chuck us, scoochie, coochie, coo. They pat us on the head. They even smell us. We smell good. They even smell us. When you're 35 years old and you're still acting like a 3-year-old, no one's chucking you under the chin and you smell bad. When we're children, we're provided for, and God does that. He provides for all our external physical needs just like any good father. Shelter, food, livelihood. But we're supposed to take what He's given us externally and grow to maturity internally. Become the men and women of character that He wants us to be so that we can ultimately go and live with Him in the spiritual world. We have to have perspective on the dark valleys of life. Imagine a seed. Now a seed is depressed. Every spring, We get the potting soil, we get the little racks, we get the seeds, and what do? You depress, don't you? You depress. You read the package, and it says, with your finger, depress a seed 1.5 inches into the potting soil. And then you cover it over. And imagine the seed in there. Oh, it's dark down here. I'm depressed. It's lonely down here. I'm starving down here. It's hot down here. It's limiting me down here. But the fact is that for that seed, being in the dark is necessary to germinate, to get nourishment, to get warmth, to get the resolve and the strength to burst up through the dark into the light, to then fructify and produce abundant fruits which the seed could never on its own have imagined. Darkness is required. Darkness is necessary to get the seed to become the tree that it was designed to be. Fourth, valleys are temporary. You go through valleys. They're seasonal. You don't spend your whole life in a valley. It's a circumstance that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. We were talking during our morning class 2 days ago about the lifetime of Lord Brahma. Devotees weren't quite sure on that, so I told them how long Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, lives. In a cosmic year, there are seasons like spring, winter, fall, and summer. Four seasons called the Satya, the Treta, the Dwarpa, and the Kali Yuga, the golden, the silver, the bronze, and the Iron Age. The golden age is 1.8 million years. The bronze age is 1.2 million years. The copper age is 800,000 years. And the Iron Age, which started 5,000 years ago, is 400,000 years. These are called yugas, or cosmic seasons. And Chatur Yugas means four yugas together, the entire cycle. These four yugas together added up, they make 4,300,000 years. Lord Brahma, who resides on the highest planet within the material world, his one day is 4,300,000 times 1,000. That's his day. Now, if you want to get his night, it's 4,300,000 years times 1,000 times 2. And then his week is times 7, his month is times 4, his year is times 12, and he lives for 100 years. And at the end of his life, he says, how did it go so fast? How did it go? It went by in a blur. Everything's temporary. Even from Lord Brahma down to the insignificant ant, everything is temporary. Prabhupada told the story about a sage one time. He was standing in tree pose on one leg, practicing pranayama, and he'd made a vow that he would stand in tree pose until every single hair of his body dropped out. One hair would drop out every 1,000 years. And he was a very hairy sage. Bystander came by one day and said, hey, you're standing out in the scorching summer in the freezing cold. Why don't you just take a little time off, a few hours, whatever, build a little shelter for yourself. Sage said, why should I bother? It's only temporary. Bhagavad Gita, right in the beginning. Matushparshastu konti asitosni shuka agama painu nitas tamsta tichasra bharata. Sometimes we're exposed to excessive cold, excessive heat. There's nothing we can do about it. We just have to learn to stiffen up and tolerate it. In India, the women modestly dressed in saris. South India gets sometimes 115 degrees in the summer. And the woman is cooking over a hot fire in 115 degree heat. She cannot start stripping off items of apparel. It's not allowed according to the etiquette. She simply has to continue. In the winter time, there are no heated rivers in India and very few showers. So if you live in village India, you have to take a bath. You cannot go into your day without having cleansed yourself. As distasteful, as pinching as it might be, you go into the river with all of the fellow village people. There's nothing you can do to change it. You cannot change the pinching cold of winter, the scorching heat of summer, any more than you can make the sunrise at 3 o'clock in the morning. You simply have to learn to tolerate it. And what enables us, what empowers us to tolerate It's not permanent. It didn't come to stay. It came to pass. That realization gives us what we need to tolerate. I love this poem, and I'm going to ask you to participate. The refrain of this poem, I think it's 6 verses, is "even this will pass away." So will you do this with me at the end of each verse? Will you say with me, "even this will pass away"? Let's try it. "Even this will pass away." Once more. "Even this will pass away. Once in India reigned a king who upon his signet ring engraved a maxim true and wise, which, if held before the eyes, gave him counsel to glance, fit for every change and chance, solemn words, and these were they, "even this will pass away." Trains of camels through the sand brought him gems from Samarkand. Fleets of galleys over the seas brought him pearls to rival these. But he counted little his gain, treasures of the mine and main. What is wealth, the king would say, "even this will pass away." Mid the pleasures of his court, at the zenith of their sport, when the palms of all his guests burnt with clapping at his jests, seated amidst his figs and wine, said the king, "O loving friends of mine, pleasure comes but not to stay, even this will pass away." Fighting on the furious field, once a javelin pierced his shield, soldiers with a loud lament bore him bleeding to his tent. Groaning from his tortured side, "pain is hard to bear," he cried, "but with patience day by day, even this will pass away." 2 more. Towering in the public square, 40 feet in the air, stood the statue of the king. Then he, disguised, unknown, gazed upon his sculptured name, and he pondered, "what is fame? Fame is but a slow decay, even this will pass away." Struck with palsy, wise and old, waiting at the gates of gold, said he with his dying breath, "life is done, but what is death?" Then in answer to the king fell a sunbeam on his ring, showing by a heavenly ray, "even this will pass away." When Krishna was on the planet, the Supreme Personality of God had descended 5,300 years ago. There were certain opponents, there were certain atheists and tyrants and demons who fought him, were envious of his position. One such was Jarasandha, and he had a friend named Sisupal. Sisupal wanted to marry Rukmini, and it was all arranged. Rukmini didn't want to marry Sisupal. She sent a letter to Krishna. She said, "you please kidnap me. Sisupal is a jackal, and you're a lion. So you just please snatch me from the jaws of the jackal, and you take me for your own." And she's, in fact, Lakshmi, the eternal associate of the Lord in the spiritual world. Sisupal, it's the greatest day of his life. He's so happy. He's going to get the most beautiful girl in the world. He's standing there in his dhoti and kurta, thinking he's looking really spiffy. And there's Rukmini walking from the temple of Durga reluctantly. And Rukmini's like, "where's Krishna? Oh my God, Krishna, please show up soon." And then just at the last minute, Krishna shows up in a chariot. He puts Rukmini on his chariot, and he drives away. And all of Sisupal's soldiers and Sisupal himself give pursuit, but Krishna cuts them all down and takes Rukmini for himself, as it should be, because she's his eternal associate. Sisupal is suicidal. "Oh, my life is over. I can't live anymore. I'm going to commit suicide." This is kind of funny, because one demon is counseling another demon. Jarasandha says, "listen, Sisupal, O tiger among men, give up your depression. After all, embodied beings, happiness and unhappiness is never permanent. As a puppet dances by the desire of the puppeteer, so this world, controlled by the Supreme Lord, struggles in both happiness and misery. In battle with Lord Krishna, I myself and my armies lost 17 times. But I still never lament or rejoice, because I know this world is driven by time and fate. Now our enemies have conquered because time favors them, but in the future, when time is auspicious for us, we will conquer." Valleys are not dead ends. They're not the end of your life. It's like a tunnel. You go in it, you get in the middle, it seems like it's internal, it seems like it'll never go out, but sooner or later you're going to break through the other end of the tunnel and you're back out into the light again. It is said there is a wonderful joy ahead. Even though the going down here is rough for a while, if we stay in faith, don't get depressed, even though the circumstances seem to warrant it, there is a great joy that awaits us in the afterlife. Even if the time of your trial, the time of your tribulation lasts for your entire life, 80 or 90 years, it's just a finger snap. It's a blink in the eye of eternity. It is said our troubles are short-lived, but there is an eternal glory which outweighs them all. If you look at this world, you'll be distressed. If you look within, you'll be depressed. If you look at Krishna, you'll be at rest. It's our choice. Turn your eyes upon Krishna or God, look full in his wonderful face, and the things, the attractions, the attachments of this earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. Prabhupada said here, no one should be depressed by thinking that he or she will never be out of the clutches of matter. For there is every possibility of being rescued, exactly as it is possible for a log which is floating down a river to come to rest on a bank. And finally, the dark valleys of life are purposeful. Whether it's doubt, despair, depression, discouragement, or defeat, God has a reason for it. There's no accident. It happens to strengthen and prove your faith. They're not just a freak of nature. Krishna wants to build you up and to grow you up in the valleys of life. When life knocks you on your knees, you're in the perfect position to pray to God. We love to think of ourselves as living our whole lives on the mountaintops, but you don't build faith on the mountaintops. When things are going fine, we tend to think that we don't need God. We need to learn the art of acting ourselves into feeling. An immature spiritual person wants to wait till the feeling comes before they act. But a spiritually mature person of character doesn't act based on the senses, based on the emotion, based on the mind, based on critics, based on circumstances. When you don't feel like serving God, when you don't feel like praising God, that's the time that your faith is tested. That's the time that your faith will grow. And so every problem has that purpose to take us to where we're meant to go. Krishna is far more interested in our characters than he is in our comfort or our convenience. He's more interested in our holiness than he is in our happiness. He knows that ultimate happiness comes from holiness anyway. Prabhupada said, counseling his own disciples, when things are dark, when circumstances seem like they've turned against you, when everybody else would be depressed, he says, do not be depressed. He cites his own example. When he announced his intention to go to America at an advanced age with no money, knowing anybody, to start a worldwide spiritual movement, he said his godbrothers, the members of his own spiritual missionary society in India, Prabhupada says this kind of tongue-in-cheek. He says, my godbrothers gave me depression, repression, compression. But I continued strong in my duty. So never mind there is some discouragement. Continue with your work in full, enthusiastic Krishna consciousness attitude of service. Finishing up here in a Back to Godhead article, 1989, one of Prabhupada's disciples reminisces about Prabhupada. Prabhupada was always deeply absorbed in his relationship with his guru and Krishna and would never become sentimental about temporary things. Yet he displayed all kinds of emotion from soft, tender empathy to hard, blazing anger. In fact, he exhibited a much wider range of emotions than anyone I've ever met. He taught that even depression can be an impetus to render more sincere service, which in turn becomes the source of spiritual inspiration and bliss. Whatever appearances may be, God is working for your good. Like the seed, what appears to be pushing you down is meant to thrust you up. What appears to starve you is meant to nourish you. What appears to depress you is meant to grow you. What appears to hold you back is meant to push you upward into the light. What appears to stunt you is meant to produce in you the most bounteous fruits of the Spirit: joy, peace, prosperity, kindness, love, unlimited happiness, purpose, and fulfillment in this life, and take you back to home, back to Godhead in the next.